From Wisconsin Public Radio, welcome to the Republican primary debate for Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. I'm Ezra Wall, the host of the regional WPR program Newsmakers. Joining us for today's Republican debate are candidates Derek Van Orden of Hager City and Jesse Eben of Eau Claire. They've agreed to spend the hour with us answering questions about their campaign's ideas and the issues facing the 3rd District. The 3rd Congressional District includes all or parts of 18 counties in western and central Wisconsin: La Crosse, Eau Claire, Wood, Portage, Chippewa, Grant, Monroe, Dunn, Pierce, Vernon, Trempealeau, Juneau, Jackson, Adams, Richland, Crawford, Buffalo, and Pepin. Among the larger cities in the district are Eau Claire, La Crosse, Stevens Point, Wisconsin Rapids, Menominee, River Falls, Chippewa Falls, Plover, Platteville, Sparta, Toma, and New Richmond. The primary election takes place on August 11th. The winner of the Republican primary faces the winner of the Democratic primary between Mark Newman of La Crosse and incumbent member of Congress Ron Kind of La Crosse. By the way, we'll be having a live debate between those two candidates this coming Thursday, August 6th at 10 a.m. on the Ideas Network. Before we begin, thank you very much to the Eau Claire Area Chamber of Commerce for their partnership. They're providing the Paragon virtual platform from Wind Technologies of Eau Claire that's serving as the technical backbone for today's debate. Now let me introduce the guests of the hour. Jesse Eben is a public relations professional who has worked in both government and healthcare, originally from central Wisconsin and graduate of the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire. Miss Eben and her husband live in Eau Claire. Jesse Eben, welcome to you.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Derek Van Orden is a retired Navy SEAL whose combat deployments include Bosnia-Herzegovina, Afghanistan, and Iraq. He's been an actor, an author, a small business owner. He and his wife currently live on a small hobby farm in Hager City. Derek Van Orden, thank you for participating today.
Well, you are welcome. It's nice to be here.
So first, I want to give you each an opportunity to introduce yourselves to our audience. So let's begin by asking each of you first, Ms. Eben, why would you like to represent the 3rd Congressional District and what qualifies you to do so?
Yeah, again, thank you for having me and thanks to the Eau Claire Chamber for hosting. As a member of the Eau Claire Chamber, I'm very familiar with the setup here. So again, I'm glad they provided this platform. Again, as reiterated, I'm Jesse Eben, Republican candidate for Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. I live in Eau Claire with my husband, Cody. Majority of my background and my career has been in public relations, specifically about almost 5 years of that has been in public relations in local government. And what I did in that role was I heard directly from the public in listening sessions and public forums and educational opportunities, took it into the government sector to problem solve, to help constituents, and then got them timely information and helped with resolution. Also in that work, I received national and state award-winning projects that I did. And so I'm very proud of that. And that's on government communication and transparency, which is very needed in today's age. And so also in that time and that role, I would work closely with police officers in crisis communication settings, working with the media and then corresponding and communicating to the public to keep them informed in times of crisis. I currently work for Prevea Health in Eau Claire, and I work in public relations, specifically communicating and working with rural communities in the area to let them know what services are available and healthcare opportunities are available in areas of need. And why I'm running, I'm rooted in this district. I know the people. I know the issues. As you said, I grew up in central Wisconsin. I now live in Eau Claire and have family all throughout, including many of those cities that you noted as some of the population areas of Wisconsin Rapids, of Stevens Point, of Platteville. And what we need after 24 years of having a representative who hasn't listened is someone who will listen and who will be an advocate for the people here, who will bring their voice once again to Washington, D.C. And what we've done with our campaign, with this is a grassroots campaign. And with the work that we have done and the acknowledgement that we have gotten, I've been endorsed by more than 30 people throughout this district, state representatives, state senator, sheriffs, mayors, county chairmen, people all throughout at all jurisdictions, levels of government who have seen the need and they understand their communities well and know who will best represent them. And they've chosen to back me as that candidate who will represent them at the federal level. And that means a lot. And we are at a turning point in our country with the issues at hand, the rise of socialism, the calls for defunding the police, the threats in our constitutional rights. And now more than ever, we need new conservative leadership. And so I'm running passionately to serve the people here.
Mr. Van Orden, how about you? Let's share your qualifications and explain why you're running.
You bet. A little background information. My brother and I were raised by our single mother in abject rural poverty. Our joke about her was that she was 5 foot nothing and harder than woodpecker lips. She was an Irish farm girl and tough. We lived in a small town called Heartland in Waukesha County where we grew up. And our mom taught us this. You have to have a work ethic and you have to take care of people. I joined the Navy when I was 18 years old. I served for 26 years, 21 of those as a SEAL. I deployed to combat 5 times during that period. I also was a corpsman. That's a military medic. And I was a civilian paramedic also. My wife and I, Sarah Jane, have 4 children and 6 grandchildren. We've been married for 27 years. Our children went to the University of Wisconsin-Madison. They went to Marquette. And in our own third district, we went to University of Platteville and also University of Wisconsin River Falls. So I am a Christian, and my worldview is shaped by my faith. I am profoundly pro-life and have been endorsed by Wisconsin Right to Life and Pro-Life Wisconsin with their highest ratings. I'm a strong supporter of the Constitution and a strong proponent of the Second Amendment. Shall not be infringed means just that. And I took an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States when I was 18 years old, and that did not expire. Well before I retired from the SEAL team, Sarah Jane and I bought our farm here in Wisconsin where we raised hay. And we now have a small hobby farm in Hagar City. We've got 14 tillable acres of alfalfa. After I retired, Sarah and I moved back as soon as we could. We started a small business to give back to our community. When I was in Africa and Iraq and Afghanistan and stationed in Germany, our neighbors took care of our farm and they wouldn't even accept gas money for mowing the lawn. And our front lawn was an acre. I mean, it's a farm. But that's who we are as Wisconsinites. So as a Navy SEAL veteran, a husband and father, a paramedic, small business owner, what I'm going to bring to this race, what I am bringing to this race, is tested and proven leadership. We've been endorsed by hundreds of people by winning the 3rd District Caucus with over 66% of the vote on the first ballot. We've been endorsed by my great friend, Dan Kopanky, Senator Moulton, Representative Shannon Zimmerman, State Senate Leader Scott Fitzgerald, Congressman Sean Duffy, Congressman Mike Gallagher, and Congressman Dan Crenshaw. We've also been endorsed by one of the finest people to ever serve as the governor of the state of Wisconsin, and that is my friend, Governor Scott Walker. And I just got to say something. I wish he was in office today, and I never would have signed the recall petition for Scott Walker like my opponent, Jesse Eben, did. And very recently, one more, we just got the endorsement of the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence. And they all endorsed me because they understand that I am the only candidate that is capable of beating Ron Kind. And that's exactly what needs to happen.
All right. Launching right into our questions, an issue of great concern to Wisconsinites is the pandemic related to COVID-19 and the government's response to it. Congress has passed several major relief bills aiming to give aid to businesses and individuals affected by efforts to slow the spread of COVID-19. Given the most recent economists think efforts won't be enough to compensate for high unemployment and reduce consumer spending, what should Congress prioritize in future bills? Ms. Eben, let's start with you.
Yeah, well, this is very timely as the U.S. Senate is considering the latest bill that was proposed by the House Democrats, which was the HEROES Act, which is a $3 trillion pork spending bill. So right now, the U.S. Senate is looking at that and renaming it and reworking it and getting it down to $1 trillion. And that is the HEALS, which is the Health Economic Assistance Liability and Schools Focused Act. And the priorities of what's coming next are a liability. What's going to happen in that bill or that they're hoping will be passed, is that there's liability so that schools, nonprofits, universities cannot be sued, have frivolous lawsuits against them if someone there were to have COVID. So that is huge. That was not included in previous bills. And then really going forward with the priorities of what needs to be included, if there is an additional spending bill, is that we focus on getting back to normal. And one of the biggest steps that we can take as a society to get back to normal is to get back to school. And so if the focus should be then on having the proper PPE for schools and what they need throughout the nation to open safely. So that is a huge priority. On if there is going to be that additional spending, we need to focus on what it is. Now, beyond spending in this bill, we need to make sure that there is accountability and transparency. There is still $100 million from the previous CARES Act that is unaccounted for. We don't know how it's spent. And a huge issue with that is that there were $80 million by Planned Parenthood that was received in the CARES Act that they were not actually eligible to receive, and they got that money, and they need to give that back to the government. So there's a lot of accountability and transparency that needs to happen in these future bills. And we'll see what happens as the Senate and the House look for an opportunity to take the next step.
Mr. Van Orden, what about you? What should Congress be prioritizing in these COVID relief bills?
Congress absolutely has to prioritize immediately getting America back to work safely. We as a society need to be able to leave our houses and go back and work to restart the economy. We cannot continue to spend trillions and trillions of dollars that we simply do not have. We quadrupled our annual budget with a single bill, and we cannot continue to do so. So what Congress needs to do is work very closely with the Trump administration to make sure that they're doing everything we possibly can to get Americans back to work. And I agree with something that Jesse said about getting the kids back to school. That has got to happen. We need to renormalize our society. But again, the focus of Congress needs to be to work closely with the Trump administration to make sure that we are able to reopen our economy safely and efficiently.
President Trump tweeted just yesterday that the 2020 election will be the most fraudulent and inaccurate in U.S. history due to mail-in voting. Mr. Van Orden, we'll start with you this time around. Where do you stand on election security?
Election security is absolutely paramount. I mean, we live in a constitutional republic that's predicated on people being able to vote for who they want to. So what the president was referring to is mass mailings of absentee ballots to anybody that's ever been on a voter roll. And he is 100% correct. If that happens, that is a recipe for voter fraud on the grandest scale that has ever taken place in this nation. It will make Chicago look like, well, Chicago. So what we need to do is make sure that if someone is going to get an absentee ballot, that they're verified that that person is going to cast that ballot. I had to vote absentee several times when I was deployed overseas defending our nation in the military. So we need to have absentee ballots, but they have to be verified that each individual that is getting that absentee ballot, number one, requested it, and number two is the person actually filling it out. And then the third part is we got to make sure that they're actually counted. They just did a study. It was with 3% of the absentee ballots during an anecdotal study for absentee ballots weren't counted. 3% is a huge amount of voters that are being disenfranchised simply by the post office. So I agree with the president. If we do mass mailings of absentee ballots to just anybody that's ever been on a voting roll, it's going to lead to fraud on a grand scale.
Ms. Eben, what about you? Do the increase in mail-in ballots affect election security?
Absolutely, and especially with what the Democrats are calling for with almost all mail-in and voting, ballot voting. Even former President Obama was at a funeral yesterday talking about this and proclaiming how great it is and how we need to do that. Absolutely not. I mean, how many times have we gotten our neighbor's mail? And so we cannot trust on the Postal Service. We should be prioritizing safety, security, and with that, encouraging, you know, day of voting as much as possible. If you cannot make it to the polls, there's absentee. And again, having that verified, you do have to have your ID verified, whether online or in person when applying for that. Now, there are ways that there people are skirting around this. There's a section that you can complete on an absentee ballot when you go to the clerk's office called indefinitely confined. And that means that you will forever receive a mailed ballot to your address, whether you move or not, that will be constantly coming there every single election with no doctor's note needed. So when we're talking about election security and talking about the future, it's happening right now. There are already elections throughout this nation that have occurred where there has been only mail-in ballot voting. One of those was out in Maryland. Kimberly Klasick is running for a congressional seat there to fill the former Elijah Cummings seat. And they did that. And there were multiple issues, issues with counting, issues with identity, issues with multiple ballots received at a single residence. So this is, you know, proven that we're seeing that there's fraud out there. And if we want actual elections that we can count on, we need to keep safety and security at the utmost importance and keep transparency through the government, including elections, a top priority.
Ms. Eben, coming to you first this time. This week, Governor Tony Evers issued a statewide mask mandate for people in public spaces. Do you believe the government should have the authority to require masks in the interest of public health?
The government should not have the ability to mandate masks. This is an infringement on our constitutional rights, our God-given rights upheld by the Constitution. And this is our personal liberty. Now, I reached out to multiple sheriffs yesterday when this mask mandate was originally ordered and announced, and I asked if they would be enforcing it. And I've heard from everyone that I've heard back from will not be enforcing it. And the reasons that the sheriffs will not be enforcing it is, one, they do not have the resources to do so, many of which these are rural counties in our district with limited resources already, sometimes maybe four deputies going out throughout an entire county. So they do not have the resources to respond to people calling on others, saying they're not wearing a mask or take the time for citations to do so. This will then go likely to the health director of that county and committee work, and then the county board for further decisions. But the sheriffs have stated that they will not enforce this. This is not a priority. And it's also put them in a tough position when there's already a lot of negative rhetoric with law enforcement in our communities and at a national level, putting them in a tough position to enforce something that most people don't agree with, or maybe we're at 50%. But most laws that they carry out or practice are 95% approved by the public. This one is not. So again, the sheriffs will not be enforcing this, and I agree with the sheriffs.
Mr. Van Orden, what about you? Masks in public, does the government have the authority?
No, they don't. One of the basic predicates of living in a capitalist society is that you have personal property rights, and that includes a store. So if the government is mandating what an owner of a store has to have his customers do or not do, that's in direct violation of the individual rights of the owner of that store and their personal property rights. That is where we move away from capitalism into socialism. Don't get me wrong. COVID-19 is real. It is something that needs to be confronted soberly and seriously. We have to find the balance between personal rights and public safety. So let me give you an example. The personal freedom that Americans should have is to be able to wear a mask or not. The personal freedom that an American should have is to be able to go to the store that they want. If there's two grocery stores, for instance, and the owner of the grocery store wants to have everyone that enters the store wear a mask and they own that property, that's a function of personal property rights, which is, again, a basic requirement for a capitalist society. Then the individual consumer, the American citizen, can exercise their personal freedom to choose which store to go to. If they want to have a mask on when they go to a store, they can wear it in either one of them. If they choose to not wear a mask, then they need to go to the store that does not mandate mask wearing. But once again, Governor Tony Evers has overstepped his bounds, and I am just so thankful that we have a legislator that's being led by Fitz. I should call him Senator Fitzgerald. I'm so glad that these guys are in the legislature now and are able to stop these edicts that Governor Evers has been putting out. I mean, I'm a Wisconsin citizen, and these things are very important to me. And the only thing that is keeping Governor Evers from exercising even more arbitrary and capricious things across our state is our Republican-led legislature.
President Trump yesterday again reiterated that schools should reopen, in his opinion, in the fall in person, regardless of the state of the coronavirus outbreak. Mr. Van Orden, back to you. Where are you on school reopening?
I mean, I just said this a second ago. We have to make sure that everything is done safely. We have to. The coronavirus is real. We also have to look at the second and third order effects of keeping these children isolated. If you think about it, the worst form the worst form of punishment other than execution is putting someone in solitary confinement. Human beings are social animals. And when our children are being forcefully separated, that has a real profound effect on them. Distance learning doesn't work that great for everybody. If you think about children in the inner city who don't have a computer, how are they learning? If you think about, we've got maybe 37% of our rural population has reliable broadband internet. How are these children going to learn if they don't have a computer, the capacity to do it? They need to be able to go to class safely so that they can interact with their fellow students of the same age group. They can have a qualified teacher that cares deeply about their education standing in front of them, answering their questions when they ask them. It's very, very important that we figure out how to do this safely. But again, the president is absolutely right. We need to open up our schools and get our children back so that we don't miss an entire generation or entire year or 2 years of education for this generation.
Ms. Eben, what about you? Safe return to schools. How do we do it?
Yeah, there's definitely ways that we can do this. My parents are teachers. My mom finished the last few months teaching virtually in a rural community. And it was tough because not everyone has access to broadband and has the access and accountability happening at home as well. Now, there is a school in our 3rd Congressional District that has already opened and, again, is setting the stage not only for the state, but many in the nation. And this is in Toma. An elementary school opened in a few weeks ago as they run a 45-15 schedule. So 45 days on, 15 days off. So that means a shorter break in the summer. And when they went back, the priority was isolating the classrooms, keeping them together. So that way, if there was an outbreak, it was isolated to a small group of kids, not the entire school or half the school. And so they are sticking within their classroom. The art teacher, the gym teacher comes into the room. Lunch is had in the room. Recess is with their school, with their class specifically. So they are doing everything they can to keep confined, to keep isolated, and to do this as smartly and as safely as possible with the resources available. The kids wear masks on the bus. So this is something that this school, the parents wanted. And the reason that they wanted this, and they did a survey, and 80% of the parents wanted their children back in schools. And actually 95% of the parents actually ended up sending their kids back to school at this school when they decided to reopen or not. And about 26 kids decided to go with online learning, or the families chose to do that. And that's great. They had the option to do so. So it is of utmost priority. The kids are happy to be back. I was touching base with the principal. The kids are excited to be back. They're thriving. The parents are excited. They have a normal routine. Again, this was often, you know, getting back to school is not only important for children, but for families and balance. As many parents are balancing childcare, teaching their kids at home, helping them out, and then their own work as well. So to get back to normal, to get back to where we need to be as a nation, school is the most structure that we have and routine. And so we need to make sure that we open safely and securely and smartly, which is actually happening right there in our district. And I'm proud that we have an elementary school right here in the 3rd leading the way.
You're listening to the Republican primary debate for Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guests today are Republican candidates Jesse Eben and Derek Van Orden, and we're very appreciative of their joining us today. Turning to the issue of health care, Ms. Eben, millions of Americans who've been laid off amid the pandemic risk losing their health insurance because most people get health insurance through their employer. What changes, if any, do you think we need to make to the current healthcare system?
Yeah, well, right with President Trump, who does want to make changes to our healthcare system, Obamacare is not working, but we do need to look at what we need in a healthcare system, and we need to continue to cover health pre-existing conditions with health insurance. We need to make sure that we have price transparency, making the healthcare a competitive market. We need to know what the prices are before people go in. You don't buy a car without knowing the price. And the same should be available for healthcare as well. Now, in 2021, President Trump has a bill that will go into effect that makes price transparency available for hospitals for the most common procedures. So labor delivery, and appendix removal, things that are done quite often with elective procedures. But we need to make sure that price transparency carries to all hospital procedures and services, along with outpatient procedures as well in the clinics, which is most of our health care that we receive is at a clinic setting, an outpatient setting. especially when we're looking at preventative health care. We need a competitive option. We need to encourage opportunities for HSAs along with health share programs, which are a great option. And many groups like our chambers are working to do as well, to have coalitions of small businesses to have the opportunity to go on to insurance plans together. So there's a lot of opportunity with healthcare as we look forward, and President Trump is doing a great job leading the way. And I'm happy to have been a part of this as well. I work for Prevea Health, which is a healthcare organization, and we are passionate about getting access in rural communities and offering a lot of these things that we're talking about of price transparency and balancing price. And we need to keep one more thing here. We need to keep that price transparency available through the brokers, the hospitals, and the insurance companies. There's a lot of money in healthcare, and the patients and the customers are the ones taking the cost and paying that high price. So I'm big for advocating for transparency right alongside President Trump.
Mr. Van Orden, what about you, healthcare? What needs to be done to make sure that that the people who need access to good quality healthcare right now have it?
Well, first and foremost, I want to preface all of this with this. The left has been giving Republicans a very hard time, including President Trump, saying that we will not address pre-existing conditions. We have family members that have pre-existing conditions, and when I get to Congress, I will not be part and parcel to any bill that does not first and foremost cover pre-existing conditions for our American citizens. We are a wealthy nation, we're a generous nation, and we're a loving nation. So before I say anything else, I want to make sure that is clear with everyone. I am a healthcare professional, and I have been for a very, very long time, from the emergency medicine perspective all the way through combat medicine into working in a hospital. And there are issues with our healthcare system. Here in the 3rd District of the state of Wisconsin, we do not have enough rural healthcare available for our people, and that includes mental health. We are currently going into a mental health crisis with a lot of our farmers because they're losing their farms. Depression is rising, so is suicide with farmers. So getting healthcare down to the rural area is imperative. And from the federal government stance, what we can do and what I'm going to do when I get to Congress is I'm going to continue to work with the Trump administration to make sure that we can appropriately get the healthcare needed to the most amount of people at the lowest cost. President Trump just passed a bill. He signed an executive order that lowered the price of insulin. It lowered the price of insulin, which is a maintenance drug for people with diabetes, to a level that it's never been at. And he is the first president to do this type of reform for pharmaceuticals. The pharmaceutical companies have an unwieldy amount of power inside of Washington, D.C. due to their lobbying. And that lobbying by these pharmaceutical companies is directly reflected in the healthcare costs that have been rising for decades. So I'm going to work with the Trump administration to remove these lobbyists that are working for Big Pharma. Ron Kind gets a huge amount of his money from Big Pharma, and that's just got to stop. So getting healthcare to our rural counties, villages, and townships in the 3rd District is paramount. And how I can do that as a representative and how I will is to continue to work with President Trump to push these resources down to the lowest possible level where they're actually needed.
Mr. Van Orden, we're coming to you first with our next question. We've seen the nation's attention turn to the difficult challenges facing our minority communities in our country, especially Black Americans. How can your minority constituents expect you to keep their concerns top of mind once you get to Washington?
Well, listen, I was in the military for the majority of my adult life, and the military is a meritocracy. So we don't have what you would say normally the types of issues that the civilian community has with race relations are not as prevalent in the military because we work together side by side with a common goal. The common goal is to complete the mission. So what I want the folks in the minority communities, those are Ho-Chunks predominantly, which are First Nation folks. And then we do, of course, have African-Americans and some Asians and Latinos in our district. But I want them to know that we're all working off the same page. I want them to know that we're all on the same team. And they're going to know that I'm going to represent them and think of them all the time because I have done that my entire adult life. I have stood with all Americans, regardless of race, color, creed, gender, orientation, and I've worked with them towards the common goal. And the common goal that we all share is to make our families better, our communities better, our district better, and our state better, and then the country better by doing so, by looking at each other as Americans and seeing all of us through the lens of the American flag, which is how this country should be. We need to start seeing each other as Americans and reduce, get rid of these, get rid of the things that separate us, because in fact, you know, e pluribus unum means out of many, one. We are all Americans. And these folks are going to know that because I've lived my entire adult life defending people's rights.
Ms. Eben, what about you? Once you get to Washington, how are you going to keep the priorities and concerns of the 3rd District's minority communities top of mind?
Yeah, this is a great question. And one of the things that I've promised to do in my campaign and that I will carry out as a congresswoman is to have advisory boards, to have constant communication with constituents. And as a communicator by trade, as a professional communicator, communication is key, to have constant conversations, to create relationships, to build positive relationships so that when there are issues that arise, the relationship is already built. You're not trying to work backwards and make up for lost time and trying to mend things. And what I would encourage, you know, people to do, especially in this very tense time I mentioned earlier, this we are at a turning point in our nation. Things are driven very much up to divide us in our nation. And so I advise everyone to take a step back from the national news, to take a step back from social media and look at what's really going on in your community and be reminded that we are a community. We care for one another. We care for our neighbors. And, you know, my work in local government, I saw that firsthand, the power of local government, the power of community. And that's where we can solve a lot of our problems, where we can get on the same page, where we know each other well, because we interact with each other. We have those relationships. So building relationships from the very beginning is of top priority, maintaining those relationships and having a constant communication of advisory boards. So there's a few topics out there, but one of them would be, as we mentioned, we have a few different groups within the 3rd Congressional District, Ho-Chunk, Hmong, Latinos, Blacks. We have a whole variety here, a tapestry of people, and everyone's voice matters. And that goes to bringing the voice of this district back to Washington, D.C. I'm committed to doing that. And that starts with strong relationships.
Ms. Eben, Pew Research in recent years has indicated as many as 75,000 immigrants living in Wisconsin without documentation. What's your stance on immigration reform?
We definitely need immigration reform. If people, there's many people that want to be Americans, that want to work in our country and that want to benefit from the American dream, which is a beautiful opportunity that many of us have been given from many of our ancestors, or some among us are still our first generation immigrants, first generation citizens. And there's a lot of discussion out there of what needs to change. And we need to create a merit system, a streamlined process. And I'm talking about communication, make sure that's clear. As we talk about, you know, the Dream Act, of the opportunity of young people to have, if they are in the service or if they are in college and they have a good civil record, that they have the opportunity to become citizens. That's what we should be encouraging, is that if you want to come to America, if you want to contribute to our society, if you want to be a part of this amazing tapestry that we have and the opportunity to be free, with the freest nation in the world, to come on in. But we need to have immigration reform. President Trump has prioritized this, and we need to flip the House in November so that we can work right alongside him to make sure that this happens, so that these opportunities are available, they're streamlined, and they're clearly communicated to the public and those who are coming into our country to join this nation.
Mr. Van Orden, what's your stance on immigration reform?
Well, first and foremost, if you enter this country in a manner that is not prescribed by law, you are by definition an illegal immigrant. This undocumented immigrant is just it's not an appropriate term. If you break the law, you broke the law. So there is legal immigration and illegal immigration. The best way to secure our nation, to make sure that we can have legal immigration, is to secure our border. So President Trump, by building the wall, which continues today, is doing the best thing we possibly can for immigration so that we make sure that people cannot enter the country illegally, so that we can help them enter the country legally. We learned during this COVID crisis that we absolutely have to understand who is entering the nation and who is in our country. So streamlining an immigration system starts with making sure that you have a definable political border, and that is being done by President Trump building this wall around our nation. It's very important. So many people who thought that that was a bad idea prior to COVID-19 happening now support building this wall because they understand how important it is to secure your nation's borders.
Mr. Van Orden, we're turning to agriculture now, a hugely important issue in Wisconsin, and especially in the 3rd District. First aspect of the question to you, ag has always played an important role in the economy of the 3rd District, but the number of farmers is fading fast. Yet the Trump administration has imposed tariffs on China that have shrunk markets for Wisconsin's farmers. Mr. Van Orden, where do you stand on the tariffs put in place by President Trump, and what should Congress do to make farming sustainable here in Wisconsin?
Well, I'm looking out my window right now at my alfalfa. I live on a farm, so farming is near and dear to my heart. I got to meet Vice President Pence the other day in Onalaska. It was great. We had a 10-minute personal meeting. That was after a USMCA roundtable. And that's when the vice president decided to endorse my campaign. So the best thing that the United States of America can do for farming in the 3rd District is to continue to implement the USMCA. That is the new agreement that replaced NAFTA, which was a disaster for all folks involved. So what USMCA became, it implemented July 1st, and we already saw a bump in dairy. There's a 6-month phase out of the two programs that the Canadian government uses that they are allowed to subsidize their dairy farmers. Those are going away, so we're going to see a continued increase in dairy prices. That is very important for our farmers here in the 3rd District. As far as China, do you really think China is our friend? We put these tariffs up. Are they going to buy anything right now? Are we going to sell anything? So I think this is maybe a little bit of a dated question, because the relationship with China has changed significantly. What we need to do is to make sure, and at the federal level, what I can do to help the farmers in the 3rd District, really, quite frankly, including myself, is to make sure that we have a level playing field. A level playing field will guarantee that the American farmer will be able to sell their products on the international market. And every single time the American farmer has had a level playing field, they've done great, because nobody farms better than an American, and no American farms better than a Wisconsinite.
Ms. Evans, same question to you. What's the role of Congress in supporting Wisconsin agriculture, and do you support the Trump tariffs?
Yeah, this is a great question, a very relevant one. I was out with farmers yesterday throughout the district doing a farm tour, not hobby farmers, but real farmers. And we had great conversations. We talked about the tariffs, and this was specifically from crop farmers. And they were talking about that they were willing to go along with this because China has taken advantage too long. And they were very excited about the trade deals that we were going to have with China. And unfortunately, they stalled with COVID and where we are now with our relationship with China. But there was a lot of great positive outlook that they were excited for. And our farmers need something to look forward to, just like they need competitive trade to look forward to. So the USMCA is going to be pivotal. It's going to bring in $550 million for our dairy farmers. That is huge, especially in the 3rd Congressional District. We are the most ag-centric district in the entire state of Wisconsin. So not only $550 million, and that's from the USMCA fact sheet, but there'll be $235 billion economic impact in the nation as a whole. So that trade deal is huge. I'm proud of President Trump for pushing that through, for prioritizing our farmers, specifically in the state of Wisconsin, which have not been prioritized. And through my discussions with farmers all day yesterday, we talked about how can they succeed? What is needed? And really what they want is they want a free market, they want competitive trade, and they want the opportunity to succeed. And that's that free market, that's competitive trade. And because they're passionate about farming, we need farmers. That is a huge, and that's why we live in Wisconsin. That's why people came here, they settled here because of the farmland. And we must do all that we can to continue this legacy. And what I'll do in Congress is I've committed to as much as I can. You never get to pick your committee assignments, but I'm committed to being on the ag committee and having a voice at the table. And this has been, I've talked with many farmers throughout the district, and they've said, once again, we will have an ag committee voice, which is huge. Steve Gunderson, who is the congressman before Ron Kind, was on the ag committee and had a huge voice and huge role, and was a fighter for our representatives and or for our ag district. And that's still remembered. That's 24 years ago that existed, and the farmers still remember the work that he did for them. One more thing that was mentioned by farmers is that the regulation that is out there, one, they would like more deregulation because it really stifles them in what they can do. And the regulation that is out there specifically for organic farming needs to be followed through on because there's certifications that are false specifically with some of the bigger farms in the South of what is organic and not. And it's flooding the market and it's hurting the price and the profits of the organic farmers in this very district.
To those listeners and viewers just joining us, this is the Republican primary debate for Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. I'm Ezra Wall here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guests are Jesse Eben and Derek Van Orden. They are facing each other in the August 11th Republican primary. And if you missed part of our earlier discussion, not to worry, both the video and audio will be available after this on our website, which is WPR.org. Ms. Eben, the 3rd District is made up of more than 11,000 square miles of land, much of which is farmland. Farmers have taken a beating for several years, and the pandemic is presenting even tougher challenges. As a member of Congress, what could you do for the farmers of the 7th District?
Of the 3rd District.
Yes. The 3rd District.
Oh, it's okay. It's okay. They border a large portion of Sherman counties. So what I'll do for the 3rd District, as I mentioned previously, is I will be committed to be on the A committee, work my darnest to get on there, to have a strong voice, and then also create an advisory board. I mentioned this earlier in one of my questions, but I'm committed to advisory boards of constituents throughout the district of people who know the issues, who are closest to the issues, and with that also know the solutions. So I've been talking with farmers. This isn't just a future promise. I've been talking with farmers before I announced my candidacy and all throughout this campaign to stay attuned to the issues at hand, to stay in conversation with them about what's happening, how things have adjusted specifically with COVID. And that's directly related to the supply chain management and striking that and how that hurt them significantly. And when I talk about deregulation, less regulation would have made it a little bit easier for us to adjust for the farmers to adjust with the milk, with the cheese, and where that was going. So what I can do is be a strong voice, be an advocate, encourage competitive trade, encourage deregulation. A lot of them just nod their head at deregulation. There's too many things limiting farmers, causing strife and causing additional costs that they cannot take on at this point and don't want to take on. Again, we need to open the market. And we need to get farming where it needs to be. We need to be passionate about that. I come from a family of farmers, especially down in the southern part of the state. It's hard work, and it's committed work, and we need advocates for them at the congressional level.
Mr. Van Orden, to you, what are a couple of things that the farmers of the 3rd District can specifically count on?
Sure. Well, first of all, hobby farmers are farmers. What is really who's really having the issue here in the state of Wisconsin and 3rd District specifically are small farms. And that's what I live on. So we just got to remember that smaller farms are having a more difficult time. These century farms are having a more difficult time than these larger corporate farms. USMCA was held up for over a year in the Ways and Means Committee. Ron Kind is Nancy Pelosi's chief whip on the Ways and Means Committee. And during that period of time when this trade deal was held up, we lost over 1,000 farms in the state of Wisconsin. And that, for someone who represents an agricultural district, is nearly unforgivable. There was a package that was passed. It's called the Farm to Families. And that is a huge, huge package. And what that does is you buy products from different farms, and then it's sold throughout the USDA. The state of Wisconsin, the dairy state, received 1% of those contracts, 1%. So what I'm going to do is when these bills are going through, I'm going to make sure that we are absolutely, the Western Wisconsin farmer is represented properly in Congress. And that has not been happening under Ron Kind. And advisory boards are excellent. We speak to people from all different walks of life throughout the district constantly. You said there's 11,000 square miles. That's right. We've put over 6,000 miles on our cars driving back and forth, speaking to every aspect of the society here in our district. So as a member of Congress, what I will be doing is actually paying attention to the farmers. Ron Kind says that he pays attention to the farmers in the district, and he does not. When the Paycheck Protection Program was initially passed, and that was the large part of the largest spending bill that has been implemented by the United States since the Second World War, the group of people that were forgotten were dairy farmers. Ron Kind tells people he goes to bed thinking about farmers, wakes up in the morning thinking about farmers. But when the largest spending package that was passed in the history of the nation since World War II, the one group of people that he forgot to include were dairy farmers. I will never do that. I will represent these folks like I represent everyone I have through my time in the military and as a business owner.
Mr. Van Orden, to you first this time around, large parts of the 3rd Congressional District rely on summer tourism, as you surely know. Most events for the remainder of 2020, however, canceled. What should Congress do to help Wisconsin's tourism industry?
Well, I live on the Great River Road, and this is the driftless region of the nation. It is the most beautiful part of the state, and I think that this state is the most beautiful part of the nation. But the federal government is not responsible for the tourist industry in the state of Wisconsin. Governor Tony Evers is responsible for closing the state of Wisconsin down. So it's really, I am running for a federal office. So the ability for the United States federal government to reach down into the state to try to manipulate the tourist industry is an inappropriate use of power. The government doesn't work that way. Can the federal government provide funds to float different businesses? They're already doing that through these COVID spending costs. But when these folks decide to close their businesses and shut down festivals, we lost our Oktoberfest in La Crosse. There's just a ton of them. We lost in Pierce County. They closed our fair. We had essentially a virtual 4-H fair. So kids wind up taking the animals that they've worked on throughout the year, and they get seen by an individual judge and no one gets to see them. Wisconsin is a state that is a social state. We have a pub culture, we have festivals, and that's what we should be doing. And unfortunately, Governor Evers and several different folks decided to, through the county board system, decided to close down these festivals. And there really is not a place for the federal government in that equation.
Ms. Eben, what about you? Do you think Congress has a role in helping the tourism industry recover?
Not in the state of Wisconsin. So the state of Wisconsin, there is, you know, a tourism director, and we need to make sure that the state takes that on. And that is a huge industry for the state of Wisconsin. People love to come here. They love, and really the 3rd Congressional District is one of the most beautiful districts in the state. And we need to be an advocate for that and a proponent of people coming to this district to see our farmlands, to see the greenery, to see the farmland actually farmed by farmers. And so what we need is we need people to encourage them to come here. And so while I can't do anything as a future congressperson to put funds into the state specifically for tourism, that's the state's role. But you can be an advocate for your district. You can encourage economic activity in the communities within your 3rd Congressional District. And let's not forget, this not only includes Western Wisconsin, but also Central Wisconsin. And there's a lot of people who are still coming up to the cabins on their lakes and who are still investing in our communities, going to pubs, going to wineries, to breweries, to visit what we have to offer here, to visit the beautiful landscapes, the unique geology that we have in the driftless region on the western side and the central sands in the middle. We're very fortunate with the beautiful district. And so you still can be an advocate. You still can be a proponent of your district and a voice who is passionate about opening up the communities here. The counties want to be open. The people want their businesses to have traction. And so you can just be the best advocate possible and the voice and work at a, you know, and still work with those partnerships with the state and the local level, the county, the towns, to encourage with the activities that are going on or if they are virtual, to just help market that, to help promote it, to help make sure that the communities within your district continue to succeed.
Ms. Eben, turning the page now, last summer after the mass shootings in El Paso and Dayton, President Trump called for red flag laws that would help remove guns from those judged to pose a grave risk to public safety. Ms. Eben, you are a member of the National Rifle Association and the Gun Owners of America. Do you agree with the president that we need red flag laws in order to curb gun violence?
I do not agree with red flag laws, not one single bit. We don't need more gun legislation. It only hurts law-abiding citizens. And President Trump has changed his views on red flag laws since then after considering that. And what we need, and that's why I've been endorsed by multiple sheriffs throughout the district, is they asked me specifically where I stood on red flag laws. And I said, I do not support them and I never will, because our sheriffs and our deputies will be the ones going to these houses to try to confiscate arms from people. And this doesn't work. We don't need more gun legislation one bit. I am a strong advocate for our Second Amendment. It's a constitutional right. And we, along with not need anymore, what we do need is we more options for those who have concealed carry to go across state lines. We should have a national concealed carry permit. I'll continue to work. I'll work on legislation so that we get to that point, so that it doesn't matter whether you are in Minnesota, whether you're in Iowa, Michigan, Illinois, any of the states specifically that border Wisconsin and beyond, that you can you are able to protect yourself, your family, your friends, and all of those around you. So back to your question, I do not support red flag laws. I know Dan Crenshaw was supporting that as well, but I will not stand for that.
Mr. Van Orden, what about you? Red flag laws? Or if not, how do we get gun violence under control?
No. Red flag. People always throw out, the Second Amendment, because that's the only one they're familiar with. So the red flag laws are actually violate the Fourth and Fifth Amendments of the Constitution in the United States. They are unconstitutional. And the president has changed his views on that. And I never changed my views on it because they've always been wrong. The Second Amendment, when that says shall not be infringed, that means it shall not be infringed. You want to talk about weapons. When we're talking about being able to carry a weapon from one state to another, that's a universal reciprocity for concealed weapons. That's one thing that should happen. But what also should happen is a constitutional carry. The ability for local governments to restrict a individual's right to carry a weapon is unconstitutional. So these red flag laws need to be removed if they're in place. We are needlessly endangering sheriff's deputies, we're needlessly endangering police officers, and other folks are going to have to try to confiscate these weapons. Now, if someone has a clearly definable and diagnosed mental health condition, they should not have a weapon. But that is a minuscule amount of people that we're talking about. These red flag laws are just broad brush trying to remove constitutional rights from American citizens. And I do not support them. I never have supported them. And I don't care who supports them. I don't.
Mr. Van Orden, turning to you first in this question, what is your perspective on climate change and what steps do you think Congress should take to address it?
Okay. Hey, no one can deny that climate is changing. And also no one can deny that the climate has been changing since the creation of the earth. What Congress needs to do is to absolutely make sure that we take the Green New Deal that AOC and her buddies came up with and throw it out the window, because that would be an unmitigated disaster for our economy and for the planet writ large. I am a all of the above solution kind of guy. We have to continue to use petrochemicals as we are learning new technologies. Should we be using wind technologies? Yes. Solar? Yes. Do we need to look at hydrogen cells? Absolutely. So in order to reduce the carbon footprint, that is outstanding. But if we take the Green New Deal and we try to implement that, it'll be an unmitigated disaster. We have the ability for clean burning coal plants. We need to use that. Natural gas is a very efficient means of producing energy. Nuclear energy is a very efficient way to produce energy. So all of the above is the right answer. Not the Green New Deal. I do not support that.
Ms. Eben, what about you? Climate change and what can be done about it?
Yeah, climate change. The climate has always been changing. We're actually at the end of the ice age. So that's why we're experiencing a record amount of flooding. Specifically in our district, we have the Mississippi Mississippi River and the many watersheds that flow off of that. And with that, we have floods all throughout this district that we have to constantly be planning for, preparing for, and then working as best to mitigate and respond to as well. And that's at the federal government. FEMA comes into play a lot for many of our towns, our communities, and that funding to respond to, because many of the roads are washed away. Culverts become an issue as well, along with bridges. So we need to make sure that our district is attentive to the changes in the climate and how it specifically affects us all throughout. I've gone to quite a few meetings with task forces that are specifically targeting what they can do to prevent the massive impact that floods have had, of just like I mentioned, of washing out roads, of flooding fields and ruining a crop for farmers. That's where we need to all be on the same page. And there are great coalitions already in this district. There's watershed districts, there's county groups, there's county co-op groups that are creating. I was at one in Monroe County in March, where they talked about how they can prevent massive flooding and respond sooner by getting an alert system that gets them to the flood spots sooner to get them preventative, and then get the local contractors working on things right away. So there's a lot of action being taken locally, which is great. And I look forward to working with all these groups as we move forward as well. And now we do have alternative energy sources. What's really neat is that the third district, along with the sixth on the other side of the state, is one of the few districts that borders a nuclear energy plant. And so right alongside, it's actually Minnesota, but bordering Pierce County, there's a nuclear energy plant. So that is something we'll stay attuned to as we look at clear energy for the future and what can be done. So a lot of exciting things happening on the energy front. And just as my opponent said, I agree. The AOC's Green New Deal is absolutely atrocious. And thank gosh it died in the Senate with no one voting for it.
Our time is drawing very, very near to an end. But let me start our final question with you, Ms. Eben. It's elevator pitch time in about 30 seconds or so. Why should voters consider you on August 11th?
Yeah, there's a lot of talk about leadership. And what I've done in this campaign in 6 months is build a coalition of people, of grassroots activists. And then with that, I've received a national spotlight on this race, being endorsed by Congressman Jim Jordan, the House Freedom Caucus, Debbie Meadows, Debbie Lesko, Virginia Fox, and other congresswomen. A national spotlight that we have never had on this race. Some of the biggest defenders of our president, who have stood by him through impeachment, who have stood, who have fought the hard fight, like Congressman Jim Jordan has done all week, of bringing a strong conservative voice to lead our nation. So I'm so excited to be a part of that team as we move forward and provide that national spotlight on this race that we've never had.
Mr. Van Orden, what about you? Why should voters choose you August 11th?
Well, because we're at a crossroads in our country right now. And what we're seeing taking place in our cities is nearly unimaginable. There's people rioting and crime is skyrocketing. Buildings are being burned and statues are being torn down. What started in Minneapolis as a peaceful protest against an unconscionable crime was allowed to degrade into lawlessness. What we're seeing in Seattle and in Portland and other cities around the nation needs to be addressed. And so for too long, we've had people in leadership positions who are simply not leaders. If you look at what the mayor of Minneapolis did before he became the mayor, no leadership. Mayor of Portland, no leadership. Mayor of Seattle, no leadership. Our governor, Tony Evers, was a bureaucrat. So
I'm going to have to wrap it up there. Our time is running short. This concludes the WPR Republican primary debate for Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District. Next Thursday, the Democrats join us, so please join us again then. You can find this debate on our website, WPR.org. I'd like to thank our guests, Jesse Eben and Derek Van Orden. I'm Ezra Wall, and this has been the Republican primary debate for Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District from Wisconsin Public Radio.